Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz is here with me. Lots of coverage over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com from last night's Michigan-Michigan State game. Pretty impressive, dominant win for the Wolverines, 29-7. We'll talk about it in the second half of this episode because, unfortunately, there is a, you know, arguably a bigger story that came after the game. I assume most of our listeners have seen the video. Go to 247sports.com right now and check it out if you haven't. But it seemed like 6, 7, 8 Michigan State players scuffled, beat up. I don't want to use the wrong word, but looked like they were trying to beat up what appeared to be Jaden McBurrow's Michigan defensive back. It was like an 8-on-1 situation, a very ugly scene. And, you know, it's not like I have like this crazy insight, but I think it's worth still discussing. Pretty significant incident. And I guess the two things that stick out to me, well, the first one is I understand that these tunnel scuffle incidents happen all over the country every week. This one did seem to cross a line. This one seemed a little bit more of a can't do that. This wasn't, you know, a bunch of guys in pads posturing, bumping chests or whatever. This was a little bit more of a lopsided altercation, probably too lopsided of an altercation to, I guess, be legal, so to speak. And so, you know, we'll see what the police investigation says and what the Big Ten findings conclude, or what if they dole out punishments or suspensions or fines. But I've already seen some people being like, oh, it wasn't that big of a deal, no one got injured, or oh, McBurrow's probably was chirping or wanted the smoke or whatever. No, I mean there is literally nothing that he could have said that would warrant that reaction, period, point blank. That is not how adults in society behave, period. Yeah, pretty significant. And I think to me, this is something that can't be ignored, because if you ignore it, you're inviting it to happen again. And you're saying, if you're the Big Ten, you're saying it's not something that we care about, which would be a real disservice to the student athletes, because, you know, this is something, I mean, Michigan State fans are mad. Michigan State coaches are mad. I'm sure Michigan State players are mad, you know, the ones that weren't involved in this. I mean, tempers rise in the rivalry. It's part of what makes the Michigan-Michigan State rivalry one of the best in college sports right now. But this was beyond rivalry. This was, I mean, if McBurrow's or whoever got in the tunnel at the same time as you and is jawing at you, like, just let him go. It's one dude. And so unless there's something we really haven't seen, no, it wasn't documented on the video, and I haven't heard of anything yet. I feel like something would have come up at this point. It's really hard not to see this being a significant punishment handed out to Michigan State. I don't know if they'll do individual players. I don't know if they'll do the whole team. I don't know if they'd put this on the coaches. I mean, the coaches were not part of the altercation, but, you know, that I guess sometimes when it's a group, you almost want to punish the team more than, you know, a couple players, and a couple players don't get punished at all. So I'll be curious to see what happened or what comes of this. You know, at this point, I don't have a ton of insight. I wasn't there. Obviously, I've seen the video and everything. And we asked Jim Harbaugh about it last night, but pretty ugly scene. And really the other takeaway for me is it's just a real bummer, more than a bummer, but it is a bummer that this is taking away from what was a pretty darn impressive win for Michigan. I mean, it's, you know, Michigan, as most Michigan fans know, they spent all offseason thinking about Michigan State. You know, they were being cited as much as Ohio State, you know, in terms of the season goals, in terms of the mission this season. I mean, they, and to Michigan's credit, they played like it. Michigan State wasn't the only team to lose really good players from last season. Michigan did the work, coaching staff and players, to put itself in position to beat Michigan State by 3 touchdowns to dominate the game. And we'll talk a little bit about the ins and outs, some of the things we saw in the game, good and bad. I mean, there's certainly room for improvement too. But Steve, I wanted to ask you, we're not blaming the tunnel. Don't get our words twisted. You know, we're not James Franklin. We're not blaming Michigan Stadium, but this is the third straight, what I would call big game in Michigan Stadium, because, you know, Ohio State, Penn State, and now Michigan State, where there has been some level of incident, jawing, scuffling, posturing, and in this case, more significant. Third straight game where there's been some incident in the tunnel. I feel like 3 times is a trend. And when there's a trend, then you do have to start looking and seeing, like, okay, what can be changed about the procedure? You know, we saw last night, actually, I don't know if it got caught on TV at all, but, you know, they held Michigan players back at halftime for like an extra, I want to say 45 seconds, not quite a minute, but, you know, a significant amount of time before they let them go up the tunnel. Obviously, last night, it was only a couple Michigan players in the tunnel. But Steve, any additional thoughts on the situation? And, you know, this is a Michigan State incident by all accounts. I mean, I don't think you could ever fairly say Jaden McBurrow's deserved what he, you know, I mean, there's nothing he could say that deserves that kind of reaction. Again, not in adult society. But without acting like both sides are at play here, any additional thoughts on the tunnel, the procedure? I mean, because again, this is something that can't happen every game, just point blank. It cannot happen every time these two teams play. I mean, it's I get some fans really like, you know, the intensity, the chippiness. Let it happen on the field. You know, this off the field stuff in the tunnel, it's just dangerous at some point. And it's really just not, I don't think it's anything, it's something anyone wants. Fans, coaches, players, media, police, you know, I mean, no one slept well last night that was involved in, or that had to either investigate or report or be a part of the post-game situation. So any additional thoughts on the procedure or anything from this ugly post-game scene?
I get pissed because it stuff like this takes away from, like, there's an appeal to how great these rivalries are. We know these two teams, programs, everyone, fans, like none don't really like each other and have it. I think that's why every year, I think, you know, fans circle this game regardless. You know, it's why on paper you would have expected Michigan to win this game, but then you see Michigan State kind of hang around a while. Like, it's just these rivalries are what make this job fun. Makes it fun for the fan, makes it fun for everybody. So, like, seeing stuff like this, like, just really kind of stinks. Honestly, there was the video coming up the tunnel, like, of a fan, like, touching Mel Tucker's head. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? Like, what the hell is going on? You know, it's like, it's so stupid. Like, what compels somebody to even think they can do something like that? You know? So, like, yeah, just disappointment. You know, and yeah, it's sad to see, yeah, players like basically beating on a guy, another player. Just like I said, stupid, disappointing more than anything. You know, it does. This rivalries to me has always been even different than the Ohio State game, in a lot of ways. And you know, it's just, you hate seeing it spill over you know, because like I said, you know, there's always boiling blood, like between these, the, like I said, the programs, the fans, you know, go on a message board, go on Twitter, like you see it every day. But it's always doesn't really, I mean, yeah, there's some line crossing, particularly between fans and stuff, but most of it's, you know, just that the backbone of a bitter rivalry. But to see it kind of, yeah, spill over into something like that really stinks. And yeah, as far as the tunnel, like, I mean, yeah, something's got to change, I would think. I don't know what exactly that is, but for the safety of who, anybody, staffers, coaches, players, like anybody that's walking up and down, something's got to change. Like I said, I don't know what it is. You see, like you said, they appear to be doing things differently at halftime yesterday. Maybe need to make it more different, more separated. You know, granted, I don't feel like Michigan has another home game this year. I don't think you're going to see, can't imagine we'll see this against Illinois or Nebraska.
If you do, though, I mean,
yeah, no, that true. Maybe a good litmus test. You got to think maybe Michigan now has some time to develop a new protocol, like at least to have sit down and have the discussion, like, is this really a problem? Like, what, you know, what can we do to avoid that? Because, you know, McMurrow's, I don't know, like, did Harbaugh say he may have a broken nose or nasal issues or something?
Yeah, nasal injury, that could
be a lot of different things.
I'm not
going
to speculate, but that could be a thousand different things.
I agree. That was my takeaway too. Nasal injury was a very general, it could have been a bloody nose. Either way, I mean, who's to say a couple kicks or punches or whatever different that goal will be, you know, he could have actually been like legitimately injured.
Yes, it could have been
a lot worse.
And I think it's fair to wonder, like, I mean, there's like 100 different law enforcement people in that tunnel. And it's like, in some sense, how did he even get to this point?
Yeah.
But also, true. Like, if there isn't that level of security, I mean, is it fair to wonder, like, I mean, there was no one to defend McBurrow's
right in
that tunnel.
Yeah, the video was pretty jarring. I mean, it was worse than I expected when I first clicked on it. So, but yeah, like I said, my biggest thing, just kind of like that parent, like, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed type feeling, you know, where it's like, yeah, it's just, you know, come on, this can't happen. You know, this rivalry is too great, too intense there's a controlled intensity between the two programs. They don't like each other at all. And then you're seeing stuff like this. It just stinks. You know, there's really no other way to put it.
Yeah. The passion of college football is really my favorite part about college football. I love that there are rivalries, that the regular season means so much to so many people. I mean, people's entire, you know, livelihoods and emotions are invested in a regular season game. And, you know, you hear about players. I mean, their entire offseason motivation is revenge on Michigan State. I mean, it's really cool how much passion there is in college football, especially in the rivalries. But there has to be lines. And that's where I think the Big Ten has an opportunity to kind of put a line in the sand about, you know, how important is sportsmanship. Because, you know, there's always going to be chirping. Every Michigan player who has ever played at Michigan Stadium has a story about some jawing or chirping that them or their opponents did, especially in this Michigan State game. And there's a lot of like the side stuff that, like, a lot of the fan banter is funny, or it resonates. I mean, people are still talking smack about the stake that was put in the field, and you know, some of this stuff is not this serious, but when it is serious and when a line is crossed, and I would argue the fan who went after Mel Tucker's head crossed a pretty significant line too. I mean, that I just feel bad for, like, you know, those tunnel moments are really cool opportunities for like kids or like young fans or fans who maybe don't get to interact with players and coaches very much. You know, that's a chance for them to like congratulate them or give them a high five. And now it's like, you know, you don't want players and coaches to be worried about being, I know it wasn't like a vicious attack, but like that can't happen, man. I wonder, I haven't heard anything, but I wonder if there'll be some sort of punishment given out to that fan, because yeah, you can't reach like that. Can't try to touch a coach's head It's pretty obnoxious and not the same kind of issue as the Jaden McBurrow's, but neither can happen. I think it's fair to say. So yeah, I'm very curious about the procedural changes and also very curious about what kind of line the Big Ten draws here. I think sounds like everything is on the table at least. And
like, what's Lloyd Carr thinking? You know, they named
That tunnel name is off to a rough start.
Name the tunnel after me. Now that it's like, now the tunnel's like, you know,
the disgraced tunnel.
Yeah, it's like all the, where all these problems are starting. Like,
it went 598 games without an issue, and now they want to blow the whole tunnel up.
You know, like you put my name on there, like let's treat it. You know, let's treat it good. So
yeah, no, it will be interesting. There's not a ton else to say without the Big Ten or the police revealing more. So if there's more to come that makes it into the podcast, we'll obviously discuss it in our next episode. But with that, we're going to hit a quick break. On the other side, just football. We figured we'll talk about this because it's very important. You can't ignore it. Again, ignoring it is kind of inviting it to happen again. But at the same time, there was a pretty significant football game. I thought Michigan really continued to look like a playoff contender. We'll talk about the ups and downs of the Wolverines 29-7 win after the break. This is the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It was a very bright, shining light, Sarajevo, and they needed to kill that light.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2.
U2, they represent a personification of our resistance.
The Hollywood Reporter hails Kiss the Future, moving and inspirational.
Kiss the Future! Viva Sarajevo!
Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to Paramount Plus to try it free. Terms apply.
And welcome back. Thanks for waiting. Yeah, just football now. Michigan 29-7. Pretty dominant game by every metric. Michigan State had 11 first downs. They scored 7 points. They had 63 yards in the second half, and I think almost all of them came on one play. You know, that big pass to Keon Coleman. Very dominant second half for Michigan. First half was effective, but I think you saw a lot of what you saw against Penn State, where you get all the yardage, get inside the 25-yard line or 20-yard line, can't punch it in. We talked about it after the Penn State game. You know, at what point do you start throwing the ball a little bit more in the red zone? Do you try some fades? Do you try? There were a couple passing routes over the middle of the field that they tried. Execution is part of it. But Steve, I think when you look at the overall numbers, Michigan drove inside Michigan State's 25-yard line 7 times. They came away with 26 points on those drives. That's just not enough. It's less than 4 per trip. Even if they score a touchdown 2/3 of the time they enter, or not even 2/3, just slightly more than half of those 7 times, 4 of those times, Michigan's scoring 40 points in this game. So plenty of good, right? We'll talk about a lot of the dominant play that Michigan enjoyed, but anything you see from the red zone situation that would change? I mean, same conversation as 2 weeks ago, but obviously when it happens twice in a row, there's a little bit more of a concern. What's your concern level with the red zone production?
Yeah, I think maybe slightly above average. The thing about throwing fades is you don't have to have 100% hit rate on them for them to be effective, as far as it's something else that the defense has to account for. Right. And so I don't know, like with Andrell Anthony, I don't know why Michigan's not throwing that up there, giving him a shot. Or Cornelius Johnson, just, you know, whoever. But so, yeah, I mean, it's there are times it feels a little predictable. I did get the sense on a couple of Michigan's drives yesterday that I think they just felt like they were totally in control defensively. And I think they just called run on third and just took the field goal.
Yeah. You want to avoid the fluky,
you know, bounce, I mean, that's what it looked like on first watch was there were a couple of them where they just seemed to kind of be like, we'll just take the points, you know, makes it a two possession game to a three possession game. We'll just take the points and let our defense continue to dominate. But even with that, you know, just still, it's kind of peculiar because there's, you know, you have a quarterback that can make plays with his arm or with his feet. You have a great running game. You have length at the receiver position, you know, just,
and the speed to go horizontal, like with end rounds or whatever.
Yeah, you have all, you know, this is what we talk about all year Michigan offensively is like they have such a diverse set of skill players across the board, you know, that it's a little, it is slightly peculiar that they're not having more success and at least punching the ball in the end zone. Because they do seem to want to just kind of do the will instilling stuff when they get inside the 5 or 6 yard line, and teams are now just selling out to stop it, and it's been somewhat successful. I mean, you know, yeah, Michigan State definitely had a bend but not break type deal for a healthy portion of the game yesterday. You know, so yeah, I think Michigan, you know, more creative, I guess. I don't know, like, it's hard to like sit here and say we don't know what they're calling or what they're doing, but from my standpoint, yeah, they have too many different guys that can make plays in too many different ways that they shouldn't be punching the ball in the end zone more than they are.
Yeah, and it is
actually, you know what, Zach, real quick too, sorry, this is to give you props. I think this is along the lines of that whole, you know, Michigan is a playoff contender, we need to hold them to a higher standard as far as maybe being a little more nitpicky, right, about that, maybe some of the flaws that are showing. I mean, yeah, they dominated this game pretty much 3 out of the 4 quarters and they still won by 22, but okay. there are, you know, it's fair to for there to be some legitimate criticisms as well.
Well, and I will give Michigan players credit. They weren't like scoffing at the red zone questions after the game. I really do appreciate this about JJ McCarthy. He is about as transparent in press conferences as any player we've talked to at Michigan and under Jim Harbaugh. I mean, he comes in and immediately is like, yeah, we only punted once, so obviously we were controlling possession and everything, but this should have been a blowout. And Blake Corum said the same thing. He said, I'm not going to make excuses. We need to be better in the red zone. And so I don't think this is like, once it happens a couple games in a row, because there were times against Maryland and Iowa. I don't remember exactly if it happened against Indiana, but it's happened prior in this. This is not the first or second time we've written about it. And so I sympathize with Michigan's approach. It's very hard to see what Blake Corum does on a snap-to-snap basis and not say, let's just give him the ball. 3 times, 10 yards, he can do that. But what you are seeing, and you pointed this out, is Michigan State selling out, Penn State selling out. And even if they're not fully selling out, there's just less room. Like the safeties are naturally going to be closer in the red zone. And so, and the linebackers are going to be, they're going to be probably keying in and assuming run until they see pass. So Michigan continuing to win, continuing to dominate pretty much every phase of the game. But I think both Penn State and Michigan State, they left somewhere between 8 and 15 points on the field to where they could have really, because if they win last night's game like 42-7 or win the Penn State game like 50-17 or whatever it could have been, it doesn't actually change Michigan's record. But I do think it, one thing to keep in mind is the college football playoff, it's a little bit of an eye test. If they beat Ohio State, it's not an eye test. But if they don't, and they're trying to sneak in as 11-1 team, you know, the eye test is going to be a potential tiebreaker against, you know, what will presumably be a pretty crowded field of potential candidates. One more thing that we can maybe harp on as something to kind of pocket away, thinking about, okay, they'll beat their next couple opponents without too much issue, but when they play Ohio State, will this be a concern? This is another one of those. We talked about the deep ball before the game. That was really the big key for Michigan's defense. Don't give up those deep passes. Michigan State, even if it doesn't seem open, even if it seems in coverage, they're going to try those deep balls. And then they did. And it wasn't necessarily Jaden Reed. It was actually Keon Coleman, 6'4", very, very talented player. I think he might lead the Big Ten now in contested catches on deep ball passes. Entered the week tied for the Big Ten lead. Michigan adjusted, but Steve, Keon Coleman is not the last talented receiver Michigan's going to face this season. And Michigan State is not the last team that can sling the ball a little bit that Michigan's going to face this season. I guess, which side of the coin are you looking at? Are you looking at the adjustments that occurred in the second half? Or are you noticing and observing what happened in the... It was really like five plays. I think they targeted Coleman six times over like an 8-minute stretch. He caught five passes for 110 yards. Is that more concerning, or did you see enough in the second half to be a little bit more comfortable with where Michigan's coverage and secondary is at right now?
I think more the latter. Tell you, like, Keon Coleman reminded me, we were watching the game last night, reminded me of Michael Floyd from Notre Dame back in the day. Like, really, he's a lot bigger than I thought he was. Really, really good receiver. I mean, a couple of those catches are just like tip your hat type catches. I guess I look at it the same way I've always looked at really how both of these games have played out historically. You know, I mean, didn't Stroud had what, almost like 400 yards passing last year?
Yeah, he did. He did not have a bad game.
Like, statistically, right? I still think it comes down to slowing down the running game. And that goes for Michigan State, Ohio State, whoever. I think that's where you kind of cut the head off the dragon. Even though, yeah, I mean, watch Ohio State yesterday. People may disagree. Marvin Harrison Jr. looks as good as Olave and Garrett Wilson, if not better. And they're still, yeah, they're able to throw the ball at will without Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who might be better than all of them. So Ohio State's passing game always going to be a problem. Michigan's adjustments in the second half, that was something I think we're probably going to talk about, is Jesse Minter has been amazing. What was it? Michigan's only given up 6 points in the third quarter the entire season, which is
okay.
Insane. That was a stat. I think they showed that on the broadcast last night. It was like, what?
I believe that, because they really put their feet down.
Yeah.
And don't forget, that usually includes a scripted drive.
Yep.
But one thing, another stat, I think it's 61-3 now in the second half against Indiana, Penn State, and Michigan State. Now, Indiana, they probably shouldn't have been tied 10-10 to begin with. But those other two games, were a one possession game. Yep. And I believe Maryland was a one possession. Granted, that one ended up looking somewhat close in the second half anyways, but there's been, it seems like every Big Ten game, the defense has had like a couple sticky issues. And then in the second half, they don't give up jack. Like, no one scores. I mean, one field goal in the last six second half quarters.
Yeah. There you go. So, yeah, and I want to say the other stat, I think, so I was just messing around on the board here for a second. At one point, Michigan had controlled the ball for like 10 minutes and 20 seconds of the third quarter, and Michigan State had only had it for like 29 seconds or something. I mean, just, we talk about Michigan's depth up front, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Really, it seems like almost every game this season that Michigan wears teams out up front in the second half, and that's what's driving that, combined with just really savvy adjustments from the coaching staff, just really seem to be shining through for Michigan. So no, I think I'm much less concerned about a guy like Coleman having that type of game. We knew Michigan, like, yeah. I mean, when we tried to find a path for Michigan State to victory in this game leading up, was like, that was the one way, is if they would, you know, make a lot of plays on one-on-one balls. I don't necessarily consider four a lot, right? And it obviously wasn't enough. So no, one guy that had a really great game for them, he got his. He, like I said, looks like a pro. Not enough for me to at least like be super concerned about what Michigan's doing. Particularly, like I said, I mean, a couple of those plays, the coverage was almost perfect. And even in honestly, you could even argue Coleman's even kind of a different type of receiver than anybody. Ohio State doesn't really have a guy like that necessarily. Again, I'm all, on the same token, I'm saying that they might be more skilled than the group they had last year, but they don't have that kind of guy, like a 6'4", 6'5", guy that's going to jump over a Michigan defender to make a play. So, yeah, not overly concerned necessarily.
Okay, whatever your 1 to 10 concern level, I'm probably one or two notches above, just because I think you don't want to show Ohio State, you don't want to give Ohio State the formula. And you're right that they don't have 6'4", 6'5", guy, but they have really good receivers. And I think the thing that stands out to me is they have a quarterback who will get the ball there. You know, it'll be the same vein where, yeah, the receiver might not be wide open, but CJ Stroud, if not pressured, and that was maybe a concern too. I think after a lot of games where they started to get pressure in the second half, started to get it in the fourth quarter, and Michigan kind of did last night, but I don't think the pass rush is quite what it, I think it's fair to say it's not what it was last season. And I don't know if it's quite to the level where a good quarterback and good receivers, you know, have to adjust their game plan, like thinking about Ohio State. But on the other side, and to your point, Michigan shut Parker Washington down more so than Ohio State did yesterday. So, you know, and he's kind of more of the shifty, not 6'4". I totally did the thing with Coleman too, where I saw him on the basketball court and I had this mental envisionment of how tall he was, and then lined up against football players, he just looks like a completely different height. Like, I think it's so overlooked how tall NBA, or, you know, college basketball and NBA players are. Like, they can stand next to these behemoths on the football field and like tower over them. But anyway, that's just a tangent. Yeah, so I'm with you. I think the adjustments are really valuable. And I think, you know, Junior Colson, I thought, laid it out really well. You know, there's obviously an intensity and a buy-in that Michigan's defense has to have, but also their coaches, and Jesse Minter included. I think him and Steve Klingscale are really starting to look like some of the top assistants in the country at explaining things in a way that Michigan can make, because it's once every coaching staff in the country wants to make halftime adjustments, and they probably know roughly what adjustments they want to make, but you have to be able to communicate it in a way that your players are going to comprehend it and be able to adjust. And that's a credit to the players, you know, being bought in, having the high football IQ to make those in-game adjustments. But I think there is something to be said. I think Michigan's got a very good teaching coaching staff right now, and that's something we've heard for the last couple years, or I guess these last two seasons. But I think it's a coaching staff that isn't just rah-rah, that isn't just you have to do this, like it's here's how you do this, here's how you make that adjustment. There's schematic changes they did on Keon Coleman, but I think they also were able to coach things, and I think the more it happens, the more impressed I am. Last thing for me that jumped out from this game, I guess there's two ways to look at it. So depending on what kind of Michigan football viewer you are, whether you're a critic or I guess a optimist, believer, dreamer type, they did not pass for as many yards as I think anyone expected them to pass for against Michigan State. You know, we've seen their pass coverage. We've seen how much they struggled. I think if you had said before the game, J.J. McCarthy will complete 60% of his passes and throw for 167 yards, I think most Michigan fans would have been like, ah, that might be a dicey game. That might be a close game. But, and this was something we talked about in the podcast before, Michigan ran for 276 yards. It wasn't the super flashy run game with tons of big plays, but it was very methodical. I counted 24 carries of at least 5 yards. And just a lot of tough yardage, a lot of yards after contact. I'll pull up the number in a moment, but I'm sure it's very high. Steve, anything jump out to you that we haven't already discussed about the run game? I mean, to me, I think Blake Corum has been good in the short yard, tough yard situations all year. But boy, he was moving the pile a little bit more than he has in the past on Saturday. And props to him. I mean, it's 33 carries, 170 yards, I think it was. Two more touchdowns. He's up to 15 touchdowns on the season. He's over 1,000 rushing yards. I mean, I guess I don't have a giant sweeping takeaway, but I think this Michigan rushing attack, I don't think there's a team that's going to truly, truly stop it this season. Just starting to feel like it might be the best rushing attack in the country. And for how good Hassan Haskins was last season, I think this rushing attack might be the best Michigan has had in a generation. Steve, your thoughts on the ground game? Because that's not really something Michigan State gives up a lot. I think this was the fifth most rushing yards they've given up in the last 10 years. And Michigan sticking to its style, not doing the throwing like crazy because Michigan State's coverage, whatever, sticking to its own style and dominating on the ground.
It felt like Michigan State's game plan was to play deep and then just kind of put the onus on their front seven to slow Michigan's running game down, right? I mean, a lot of times, to their credit, Michigan dropped back to pass. Nobody was open. There weren't many open receivers in a lot of instances. So, yeah, I mean, man, like I think we said, like we talk about Ohio State throwing the ball all over the field and everyone just loves it and how great it is. And I mean, Michigan's doing the same thing to teams on the ground, which you just don't see that very often in college football anymore. So to me, it's as impressive at this point. I think Corum at this point has to be a shoe-in to go to New York.
Yeah, he'd have to get hurt, I feel
right?
Like.
Right, 177, two more touchdowns. You know, he's shown up for their bigger games so far this year. Nothing to suggest he's not going to continue to show up too. So, yeah, another great game from him. He's kind of the tone setter for the team. He's really kind of taken that mantle from Hassan Haskins last year. I think that's what we always called Haskins, the sort of the tone setter. I think Corum has taken that and run with it. So super, I mean, yeah, impressive. And I do, I think Michigan also just Harbaugh team, just that's, they enjoy playing that kind of football. And I think it's a much more demoralizing method of playing football, beating the team up, beating the guy across from you, running the football down their throat, holding on to the ball, not giving it to your offense. Yeah, methodical, but a brutally aggressive style. So, yeah, it's always impressive, you know. But like I said, I think people worried about the passing game. It did. It felt like Michigan State was actually selling out to stop the pass, which I thought was a little peculiar at points because McCarthy did not look his best necessarily yesterday. He was all right, but he just, you know, think of a few missed throws that he would have hit normally. So I was a little surprised, you know, I guess, and I didn't see it live. Zach, you were in the box. It sounded like Roman Wilson was held on that flea flicker play. It sounds like he'd have been open.
Was it Wilson or Johnson?
I thought they said Wilson, but maybe.
Oh, okay. Cause I think Cornelius Johnson was no Cornelius Johnson. That was on the double pass.
Okay. Yeah.
He was like wide open and but they threw to Edwards, which I think was just the play design. Like, I don't think you want Ronnie Bell going through a progression of reads or anything, but yeah, there were a couple. It was, I'd have to look deeper at the film, but it felt like it was a little bit like that Maryland game where if they connect on a couple of the open deep balls, the box score looks a lot different and people probably aren't quite as up in arms. At the same time, I mean, Minnesota, Washington. A lot of teams have had a lot of success passing the ball.
Yeah, it was, I mean, don't get me wrong. It was very weird after watching Michigan State as much, you know, cause they're always on around here. Yeah. Weird to not see receivers just constantly in the free, you know, like Minnesota. I think we talked on the preview, like Tanner Morgan was like 22 for 24 at one point in that game. I mean, and then it was just, you know, yeah, we expect Ohio State to do something like that to a pass defense like Michigan State, but to see some of these other teams, you know, I think we would have anticipated Michigan to have a better success rate throwing the ball, but
at least again, more efficient. Like even throw it 40 times, like.
Yeah. 15 for 25 yards. Is a very, very surprising number against, you know, statistically one of the worst Power Five pass defenses in the country, you know, particularly when McCarthy is leading the country in accuracy heading into the game. So, yeah. But again, like I said, it felt like Michigan State was actually did the opposite of what I maybe thought they would do. And they sold out to stop the pass. And I think Michigan just said, okay, that's fine. You know, and it worked. So
couple quick stats on Blake Corum from Pro Football Focus. Forced missed tackles. That's a stat that they use to kind of combine broken tackles, like really bulldozing someone, but also juking someone. It's a nice combination stat. He had 15 last night on 33 carries. His previous career high was 9. So that speaks to kind of the extra yardage that he gained. And in terms of actual extra yardage, yards after contact, he had 118 last night on 33 carries. That's 3.6 per carry. His previous career high, according to Pro Football Focus, was 80. So that's an extra 38 yards after contact that he gained that he previously hadn't done. So, you know, again, if there wasn't the post-game deal, you know, I wonder if the narrative would be that Blake Corum had his Chris Perry or Mike Hart kind of moment in this rivalry where he really took on all the carries that he, you know, they would give him, got better as the game progressed. I mean, that still impresses me so much that he can carry the ball 30 times and doesn't really look like he's slowing down. And this was a very impressive game for him because to get to 177 yards without a single carry getting 20 yards, you know, that speaks to how persistent you are at just continuing to stand up, stand your ground, and push for every extra yard you can get, you know, without the big plays, just continuing to move the pile, get past the line of scrimmage, the fall forward yards, you know, that Hassan Haskins frankly made a living for. I mean, now that he's in the NFL, he's probably not in the NFL without those fall forward yards. So, you know, continuing Blake Corum is continuing to show that he can be that short yardage back and be kind of that tone setter. I like that phrase up front. And yeah, even if he just gets a few more 100-yard games, I feel like he'll be a Heisman finalist in New York. And I think for those asking what he needs to do to win, I think Michigan's got to beat Ohio State. I don't know about you, Steve. I think for a running back, I think it's got to be the narrative. I think Michigan has to be in the playoff picture at the end of by the time everyone's voting. And I think if that's the case, I do think he'll have a compelling case because he'll have crazy good numbers. He's efficient as a runner. He's got the touchdowns will really help. I mean, he's already got 15 through 8 games. You know, if he's at like 24, 25 touchdowns by the end of the season, plus Michigan's good, plus he has say 1500 yards. I think there'd be a case. It's tough for a running back to win the Heisman nowadays, but I, you know, maybe this is a story I'll do in the next couple of days, but he is clearly plan A and plan B for this Michigan offense right now. And to Michigan's credit, they keep winning. They keep dominating. Steve, any additional thoughts on Michigan's 22-point win over the Spartans? It really is crazy that, you know, the morning after discussion about a 22-point win over Michigan State, I mean, this speaks to maybe the seasons Michigan State's having, but it's almost like a disappointment for some Michigan fans. But it's interesting that it's not such a, you know, triumphant tenor, but you know, the post game deal didn't help. And I think Michigan left some meat on the bone. You know, that's the phrase the offensive players have been using. But Steve, how about you? Any additional thoughts on this game? Anything that we haven't mentioned yet?
Not really. I'm kind of curious. I just can't get over for Michigan State. Like, hot, just Kenneth Walker was like that whole team. I mean, they just looked, Michigan looked so much better than Michigan State in nearly every facet. You know, I look at Michigan State, I look at their roster and wonder, when is this going to, like, is this going to get better for them next year? Like, where, what direction are they going? You know, Michigan kind of clicking on all cylinders. You know, I always kind of look at each after a rivalry game, kind of look at the big picture as far in terms of the rivalry. And I think you got to feel pretty good if you're a Michigan fan about where they're at compared to the Spartans right now. So, and there'll be no shortage of motivation next season when they meet up again. So yeah, dominating win. I you know, not obviously not that big of a surprise. I think we expected Michigan to win. You know, yeah, could have been a lot worse if they could punch the ball in the end zone. I do, like you said, I think there's a little bit of concern there. We'll see a couple more, three more weeks? Rutgers. We got Rutgers, Nebraska, Illinois, and then Ohio State. So,
yep.
Be interesting to see.
How about Illinois? Don't have to talk about it.
No.
Extended, but yeah. That becomes maybe maybe Michigan's third toughest challenge of the season. Yeah. Second, maybe.
Impressive. Like, good for Brett Bielema. It is nice. It is always nice to see teams like, you know, that rebound, like teams that have been down for so long. It's nice to see like a team, like a program like Illinois find some success, right? I mean, they've been down for so long. So, yeah. And I think we talked about a couple weeks ago, you know, I don't hate the idea of like, of that being Michigan's tune-up game now. I think Illinois likes to play a physical brand of football. That's what Bielema's teams have always been known for. So I think you look at it as a positive potentially heading into Columbus to have Illinois come into Ann Arbor. And at that point, you're talking, it'll be the first place in the Big Ten West versus presumably tied for first place in the East. So yeah, it'll be, all of a sudden, that game becomes a lot more exciting because Illinois has really stepped up and played some good football this year.
Yeah, and not to get too far into it, but in the event that Michigan loses to Ohio State and is trying to like sell itself as a playoff contender in on an 11-1 season, so to speak, hypothetically, a dominant win over Illinois if Illinois proceeds to win the Big Ten West would help with that. Because that would basically say, appearing in the Big Ten championship or not, Michigan is X good. Quick little victory lap for me. I wrote this in August. Game by game prediction preview. I'm quietly a little high on Illinois this fall. The Fighting Illini are building a physical identity under Brett Bielema and have the tools for an effective run game with Chase Brown and several offensive linemen back. Their defensive front also figures to be above the Big Ten average. And I ultimately predicted this to be one of Michigan's closer home games of the season. 38-20. So little victory lap on that. I don't want to look at the other game by game predictions. I'm sure I think I got all the results right for Michigan, but
hey, before I forget, how'd our over unders go? Cause we were on the opposite of a lot of these.
I'd have to check with Neil. I think I got 9 out of 10, right?
Damn it. All right. I had a feeling. Yeah. I told you beforehand. I thought you might, of mine were kind of risky.
Unless I waffled on a couple. I had this Michigan State game pretty much down. So not something necessary. I don't know if our listeners care about that, but you know, you and I do, we love being right. I'd rather be right than be liked sometimes. So,
yeah.
All right. With that, that's going to do it for this episode. Be sure to check out all of our written content over at the michiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. We'll see you next time.
On May 23rd,
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not going to survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.